Welcome to Rethink, a podcast focused on the future of skilled nursing. I'm Amy Stulick, reporter with Skilled Nursing News. I'm joined for this episode by Mike Bailey. Mike is president and CEO of American Health Partners, a primarily post-acute care provider based in Franklin, Tennessee, with 29 nursing homes across Tennessee and Alabama. American Health Partners also operates 5 psychiatric hospitals for seniors, a physical rehabilitation company, and long-term care pharmacy, and offers Medicare Advantage and institutional special needs plans across 12 states. Before we get to that conversation, I'd like to highlight the Rethink Conference, taking place September 11th and 12th in Chicago, Illinois. This premier skilled nursing event brings executives together to address trends, challenges, and the future of the nursing home industry. Join skilled nursing, therapy, health system, post-acute care executives, investors and professionals, as well as vendors, developers, and consultants for a one-of-a-kind event. Visit skillednursingnews.com/events to find out more. And now, my conversation with Mike Bailey. Thank you so much, Mike, for joining us. So first off, I want to let people know a little bit more about you and about American Health Partners. So why don't you introduce yourself and let me know about American Health Partners.
Certainly, Amy. American Health Partners is a diversified healthcare company based in Franklin, Tennessee, focused primarily on post-acute healthcare for seniors. Today, we operate 29 nursing homes in Tennessee and Alabama. We have 5 psychiatric hospitals for seniors. We have a physical rehabilitation company, a long-term care pharmacy, and we have Medicare Advantage institutional special needs plans in 12 states. And in addition to that, we have a clinical services division that we call True Health that provides coordinated bedside care for members of our Medicare Advantage plans.
Wonderful. And then I'm curious to learn a bit more about what's going on at the ground level for you folks. You know, anything new and exciting to announce in terms of brick and mortar locations, ancillary services, anything else?
Yeah, I appreciate the question. We're really excited about the growth potential for our True Health division. That is the division with providers at the bedside. It's a dedicated team of nurse practitioners and physician assistants that focus on proactive and coordinated care for long-term care residents who are members of our ISNP plans across these dozen states. They work closely with nursing home staff to improve outcomes and the quality of life for these seniors. Our approach to this has led to fewer hospitalizations and ER visits, which has caught the eye of our partners in those 12 states. We want to expand our model to their new groups. We're eager to take our True Health services beyond long-term care, possibly reaching folks in assisted living or even those at home who qualify for our care model. Our goal remains the same, provide top-notch care wherever it's needed the most. True Health offers an important innovation, we believe, in caring for seniors, and it has a ton of potential future growth.
And then, are there any unique staffing initiatives or partnerships with local institutions that you would want to mention? That could be schools, hospitals, or, you know, any other community institution.
Certainly, yes. A few that come to mind, we're very engaged with our local community colleges and the technical schools where nurses and CNAs are provided training programs. We have programs where students can do their rounds in our communities and achieve their required clinical hours. In addition, our communities offer various training programs to help train certified nursing assistants, and we provide support programs that help CNAs get their medical technicians' credentials. And we also have our own American Health Partners Nursing Scholarship Program. We call it our PEN Scholarship, which stands for Partners for Excellence in Nursing. And through that program, we have provided grants to more than 35 of our employees in the last 2 years to help them advance in the nursing education and earn their RN or LPN or their nurse practitioner credentials.
That's interesting to hear, Mike. And given what you folks do, I really wanted to dive into some managed care questions. The first one having to do with Medicare Advantage. I'm curious if you see Medicare Advantage, the growth of Medicare Advantage slowing or maybe normalizing given numerous CMS regulations for managed care organizations, or just general thoughts on the future of MA in nursing homes.
Yeah, great question. You know, in our part of the country, we don't really think that the growth of Medicare Advantage shows any signs of slowing down. There's just too much forward momentum with that program, largely because the value proposition to the member is so strong. Members benefit from excellent coverage and a broader range of benefits at little to no additional cost. In our American Health Plans Medicare Advantage iSNPs, every member has a member advocate who is at their side to help them navigate their benefits effectively and maximize the value of their plan. There is a lot of regulation around Medicare Advantage plans, but that's where we can step in to help our nursing home partners by staying ahead of regulatory changes and making necessary adjustments. It's a real value to our partners. Nursing home operators interested in owning a Medicare Advantage plan but concerned about the complexity and the regulation should really talk to us. They can benefit greatly from our expertise in navigating regulatory complexities. With our help, they can do this. It's exceedingly difficult to do it all by yourself. If the nursing home isn't thinking about owning a Medicare Advantage plan, they're leaving a lot of opportunity on the table to enhance their clinical programs and improve their bottom lines.
Mm-hmm. And then we've heard from some operators, you know, that they are opting to shift payer sources, you know, given Medicare Advantage pay can be less than traditional Medicare. And in some cases, that shift is toward more Medicaid. And I'm curious if you're seeing this in the states that you operate in.
Yeah, in our states, there really isn't a shift to Medicaid. We see a lot of Medicaid patients. In fact, today, more than 75% of our patients are on Medicaid. That's been the case for a while, so it's not really a new trend for us. We don't shy away from caring for Medicaid patients. That's really not going to change, we don't believe, and that's an important part of who we are. We serve the underserved and the most elderly and frail people in our communities. We're one of the few places that actually welcome Medicaid patients. They come to us seeking care, and we need to be there for them. We even take patients that are not currently on Medicaid and help them get qualified to receive the Medicaid benefit. And that's a really important initiative for us. We've embraced the fact that Medicaid is here to stay, and traditional Medicare is shrinking. The shift that's really happening is the shift from Medicare, traditional Medicare, to Medicare Advantage. As we discussed earlier, we do see that trend continuing.
Mm-hmm. And then sticking with Medicare Advantage, we've heard from providers that there are big challenges around MA rates and administrative burdens posed by large insurance companies. And I'm curious how nursing home operators can handle these pressures and if you think the situation will improve with recent lawsuits and moves toward regulating the market.
Well, we certainly see those pressures in Medicare Advantage, and we think the best way for nursing home operators to handle these pressures is to get into the game themselves. So don't wait and on the sidelines and be at the mercy of the rates dictated to you from these large multinational insurance companies. They should become an owner of an insurance company themselves. That's really our model. We partner with nursing home operators in our 12 states to create joint ventures that empower them to own and operate their own Medicare Advantage iSNP plan. As an owner of a Medicare Advantage plan, the nursing home operator is no longer at the bottom of the reimbursement food chain. You have more control over your operations, and with the support and expertise of our TruHealth clinical team, you then have the clinical resources to deliver better care. That results in financial rewards. We paid out more than $11 million last year to our partners in shared savings. It's just a tremendous amount for us.
$11 million, yeah. And I think that's a perfect segue into some other questions that I had surrounding the iSNP model that you mentioned. You know, I'm curious what trends you're seeing in the iSNP business, and is iSNP growth accelerating or slowing?
Yeah, that's a good question, Amy. The ISNIP sector continues to grow. You know, operators know and understand the model much better now, and they are eager to learn more. We get inquiries from operators from around the country looking to start their own ISNIP. And while the ISNIP sector is growing, it still remains a small percentage of the overall Medicare Advantage market. So we believe there is still plenty of runway for an ISNIP growth.
And in terms of profitability, is the ISNIP plan profitability getting better, worse, or do you think it's remaining static over the last year or so?
You know, it really depends on the market, of course, but it mainly depends on people's ability to execute. The incentives around value-based care, such as ISNIP, are geared toward better performance and improved clinical outcomes. So with that said, if you execute the model of care and deliver enhanced care with fewer rehospitalizations and better outcomes, it's a very profitable model. If you don't deliver on the model of care, your bottom line will suffer, but really that's how it should be. You need to deliver on better quality of care and you'll get better financial results.
Mm-hmm. And then sticking with other value-based care models, what is your take on the ACO model, the new team model that came out this year? Do you think that nursing homes are gaining or would gain greater leverage and financial upside with these models?
Well, I believe that ACOs are a very viable model. I'm not as familiar with the team model, but for folks who don't think the ISNIP is the right fit at this moment, an ACO is a good alternative. The secret sauce in an ACO or an ISNIP or any of these models is having the right clinical resources to provide the care. For us, that's our True Health, our clinical services team. Those people are physician assistants and nurse practitioners that deliver the coordinated bedside care in the nursing home or assisted living facility. Without those clinical resources, it's really hard to deliver on any value-based care model. Any value-based model is only viable if you have the right clinical resources in the right place at the right time.
And let's switch gears again and talk about the federal staffing rule that was just finalized. The proposal, you know, of course, we know it was finalized in April, and it's been drawing some sharp and deeply apprehensive responses with a higher hourly requirement than what was originally announced. I would just love to get your thoughts on the rule and its implications for the sector.
Sure. Well, like everyone in skilled nursing and long-term care, we're facing a staffing shortage, and we're working hard to recruit, hire and train more clinical staff. It's very, very challenging because in a lot of cases, especially in the rural areas we serve, qualified candidates simply are not out there. We would love to fill all of our open positions, but can't find the people. So imposing a staffing mandate in the face of a serious labor shortage seems only to put nursing homes in a more vulnerable position than ever before. A lot of nursing homes are in financial crisis, and this will likely make matters even worse. We may see more operators going out of business or being forced into bankruptcy, which would really be catastrophic for the sector. Our population is aging, and we need more long-term care options, not less. A staffing mandate is really not the solution, we don't think. We need a more holistic approach, a better reimbursement so we can improve salaries and compete for the clinical talent. We need more resources to train nurses and CNAs, and we need to elevate the profession in a way that helps us attract the best people. The patients and the families we serve deserve better care, and that can only happen if we find ways to attract more caring, qualified people in nursing homes.
Mm-hmm. And then at this point, do you think that legislative or potential litigation initiatives to remove the minimum staffing mandate altogether, do these have any legs at this point? And then what about supplementary legislative initiatives to boost the workforce, like the Long-Term Care Workforce Support Act?
Yeah, I really can't speak on the litigation side too much, but I do think there is a chance for legislation to help create more effective policies to address the staffing crisis in nursing homes. We as Americans are divided on a lot of issues, but I think everyone agrees our seniors need the best care we can provide, and effective legislation that provides real solutions and provides more resources to improve the funding and staffing of nursing homes is really a winner for everybody on both sides of the aisle.
Mm-hmm. And I have a couple other topical questions for you. You know, the first one related to the SNF prospective payment system proposed rule for 2025. I'm just curious to get your general reaction to that and what sticks out as particularly challenging or, you know, something that you feel operators should pay attention to.
Sure. You know, the SNF Quality Reporting Program, or QRP, compliance requirements are increasing from 80% to 90%. So reporting below the 90% compliance requirement will result in a 2% payment reduction for Medicare patients. The 90% for quality reporting requirement is going to be really difficult for facilities to comply with, especially with the staffing crisis that we face. And this is something they should reconsider given the operating environment. Now, by way of background, just for everybody that's listening, most facilities are going to have to rely on staffing agencies to meet or even come close to meeting the staffing requirements. And we frequently see incomplete documentation from an agency employee. So incomplete documentation results in missing information in the MDS and therefore creates an inability to meet the quality reporting requirements. So the new staffing requirements are going to result in tremendous labor cost increases, but zero increase is being provided in reimbursement related to that increased staffing. As we discussed previously, providers that are struggling financially are not going to survive. This staffing mandate really needs to be reconsidered. And the proposed rule includes a provision allowing CMS to make changes to the value-based purchasing metrics. And these changes may result in more SNFs seeing this 2% reduction in Medicare payments. Again, that's ill-advised. We should be investing more, not really less, in value-based care models like ours.
And then in light of challenges with survey inconsistencies and extended survey durations, what specific changes or improvements would you recommend to streamline the survey process for skilled nursing facilities and to ensure more consistent outcomes across different survey teams?
If from my vantage point, Amy, there's a really troubling lack of consistency from region to region in surveys. There needs to be more focus on education and providing guidance to nursing homes on best practices. Surveyors should be required to have worked in a nursing home setting prior to becoming a surveyor. Uneven interpretation of regulations causes discrepancies and confusions from region to region and from surveyor to surveyor. We should always remember what the objective is of the survey. It is really to make the nursing home better. We shouldn't be afraid to open the door when a survey team shows up. Fear makes people behave in ways that aren't healthy and in the best interest of quality care. More collaborative approach and process really geared toward learning and continuous improvement would, to me, be more effective than a system that's too geared toward punishment and finding fault.
And then, Mike, given the national focus on regulatory reform and the potential impact on survey processes, what advocacy efforts or policy changes would you advocate for to address the root causes of animosity and the punitive survey practices?
Well, in my opinion, it would be beneficial to have a survey process that is more like the Joint Commission accreditation process, which is in itself very challenging with very, very high standards for quality and safety, but it's a collaborative process. The Joint Commission process involves the surveyor flagging deficiencies in areas of improvement and then helping to create action plans for continuous improvement. There's a lot of communication back and forth and a shared sense of mission. Obviously, there needs to be sanctions for serious violations. Everyone agrees with that. But there also needs to be a process more geared towards training, education, and true quality improvement. There's a huge difference between how the Joint Commission approached surveys and how the state does. The Joint Commission gives recommendations with every citation, which is extremely helpful and improves quality. State surveyors refuse to provide recommendations, and when asked for recommendations, they say they cannot provide those. That's a process that should be fixed, and surveyors should be required to provide recommendations, in our opinion, for improvement with each citation.
Mm-hmm. And then for the next couple of questions, I kind of want to broaden our conversation a little bit and, you know, look toward the future as well. I'm curious, you know, how you think public perception of the nursing home space has changed since the pandemic.
That's a great question, and I appreciate it. The nursing homes are really often the target of unfair criticism, but I think it has gotten better in the recent months. We probably hit our low point at the height of the pandemic. With visitation restrictions in nursing homes, people were venting their frustrations at us, which really wasn't fair. We were doing what we had to do to keep our people safe as possible in a very, very difficult situation. People are starting to realize and acknowledge the important role nursing homes play in caring for some of our most frail and elderly neighbors. It's difficult work, and it takes a special person to care for these folks with patience, compassion, and clinical expertise. I believe in the motto, our people are truly healthcare heroes.
Mm-hmm. And then, Mike, you know, we've heard that the nursing home industry will be a major talking point in upcoming election cycles, considering the Medicare trust fund is projected to show a deficit in 2026, and Social Security only a few years after that. And, you know, if you feel that spotlight is a good thing, and, you know, how operators can perhaps harness that attention.
Sure. I believe it's going to be a tough election and a tough, close election, but I hope the long-term care industry doesn't become a political football. We account for a very small percentage of Medicare spending, so any fight over the Medicare trust fund showing a deficit really is not about nursing homes. The vast majority of Medicare spending goes to hospitals. And to my earlier point, I think it's important that everyone on both sides of the aisle recognizes the critical role long-term care facilities play in our communities. We have an aging population, and for many, especially low-income elderly people, we're the only ones who can care for them. Their families are overwhelmed, so they turn to us. As a society, we need to put more resources and more thought into how we're caring for the elderly and to invest in more technology, more people resources, and better care models to enhance the care people receive in long-term care facilities. The goal really should be to transcend the political divide and be something we can all agree on.
And then on that note, what do you feel should be an operator's priorities for shaping nursing homes to meet the future economic and social climate?
You know, I think it really all starts with quality. The focus needs to be on providing quality care and service to residents, patients, and their families. That means we've got to hire and train the right people and create a culture that focuses on quality care and rewards excellence. If you deliver clinical excellence, the financial results usually follow. You will have a better reputation, which opens the door to more partnerships and allows you to grow census, which in turn will help you to recruit and retain better and more people.
And then lastly, Mike, this is, of course, called the Rethink podcast. So what would you rethink about the skilled nursing industry?
Well, we need to fundamentally rethink the way we're caring for our elderly. For too long, the prevailing standard has been for people to receive custodial care in nursing homes. We believe at American Health Partners, the frail and elderly folks in our communities deserve a much higher standard of care, which is what our True Health team of advanced practice providers is delivering to the members of our Medicare Advantage ISNP across the country. We believe our innovative care model is coordinated and proactive and focuses on improving both the physical and mental health, enabling individuals to lead healthier and longer and more fulfilled lives. The results really speak for themselves, with our approach leading to significantly lower rehospitalization rates and much reduced emergency room visits. People are living better and living longer. That's really the promise of value-based care, and shows that when we execute on the model of care, it improves the quality of life for the people we're entrusted to care for.
Well, thank you so much, Mike, for joining us. It was a great conversation. Love your insight on a bunch of different topics. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Amy. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you.
That does it for this episode of Rethink. I'd like to remind listeners about our upcoming Rethink Conference taking place September 11th and 12th in Chicago, Illinois. Visit skillednursingnews.com/events to learn more and get tickets. Until next time, thanks for listening.